Gonna move on here to number four. Repetition is a big thing. It says the player's caution to avoid too much repetition. There are things that you can do to disguise repetition, such as altering intervals, rhythm, dynamics, etc. First, let's just literally do repetition. I find sometimes students can't even do that because they're not necessarily listening that closely to what they play. So I want you to literally play one bar, like one, two, let me just demonstrate, and then you're going to repeat the exact same phrase in whatever happens in four beats. One, two, three, boom. Now another one. Again. Now another one. Now another one. So I'm doing one bar repetition, very strictly. You cannot deviate in this step. So here's the metronome, and this time we'll record this part of it. So I can, you don't have to play what I play, but you have to do like A1, A2, and then B1, B2, exactly like that. Here we go, it lines up with the metronome. One, two, three, four. Personally, but it's not that easy. So you guys successfully did exact repetition one bar. You could also try two bars, which is even more sort of musical. Most of the time, two bars. I'll just demonstrate that real quick. Like, one, two, three, it would be like. It also slightly harder though, because you have to remember exactly what you played. So don't play too many notes. That's a great thing. So I think that's a great thing to learn. And so the author here, in my opinion, he goes to the anti-repetition maybe a little too soon. But it's a good thing to finish with. Like, there are ways to disguise exact repetition, so there's still repetition without being stale, right? So you could repeat. Let's just use, he says, alteration of intervals. So you change one or two notes, and it still has the same character, but it's not exact repetition. So I'm going to demonstrate. One, two, three, four. Telling a little story. I got just enough repetition to keep you engaged, and it's always different each time, and now there's something developing over time. We're out of time now. We got to stop, but it's a great thing. It could be the rhythm. I'll just demonstrate with the rhythm. It could be a rhythmic change. So this is like subtle change within the repetition. So here's rhythmic. Two, three, four. Etc. And I could go on and on like that and keep you entertained, hopefully for hours. And dynamics is another one he lists. So two, three, four.
Yeah.
Right? And that'll keep you on your toes a little bit. Good. This is great. There's a million ways to explore that. These are like the four biggest ones. We didn't cover the others, which we will some other time, about harmonic motion and about some unique feature and about the balance of new and old and about phrases that are not all the same length. We'll talk about that soon. In the sample, melody measures 2, 3, 5, 11, and 12 are modifications of the same curve. So measures 2 and 3 would be like... and so basically like both those measures... Like you're going from low to high, like, and then, so that's how it boiled down that whole bit right there. You have low to high, low to high, low to high, low to high, and so you got, and then let's skip to bar five. So basically it's like high and then lower. It's like, I guess you're going low to high. So not including the first note, you're going low to high and then low to high. Like, and then let's look at bars 11 and 12. You're going from low to high there. Now, Dennis, you're going to insert the other audio example. Here's the audio example from the book. So just clarifying that a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of chromatic movement. Like when you have like... And also that bit right there is right out of the diminished scale. But, you know, that's just... as soon as you get to, you have chromatics here. And then right here, you're going up the diminished scale. So that's right out of that. And so, and then he says major triads implied in 1, 7, 8, 10, and 11, and 12. So 1 would be just those two notes imply like a C major arpeggio there. So that's bar 1. Bars 7 and 8, this is where it goes. Now, I think, you know, you have to hear it in harmonic context for it to make sense. It's on the C chord, like... It's on the C chord and then the A7 chord. So, it's like implying a D triad. Like those two notes is like... sharp 11 and a 9 to the C7 chord, but it's doing a D triad is a great way to access those, like the 9, 11, and 13. That's what I think is happening there. Because you have a F sharp, a D, and an A in that bar that spells a D triad. Next, in the next bar you have... which spells like you have an E flat, a G, and a B flat. So that's an E flat triad, which is the tritone to the A7 chord. So that makes sense. So like according to E flat, it'd be 9, 7, 1, 3, 4, 5. According to E flat, that is. And so those are triads. And then let's look at bars 10, 11, and 12. This is the line that goes. And so you have like a 7 in the chord. This is the chord G7. And then you have an A flat. That's a flat 9. And then a 5 and a 1. So he's spelling like a. Like with some chromatics in between, he's spelling a G7 flat 9. Like 7, flat 9, 5, 1. And then let's continue. That's right. That's clearly a C triad. It's a D flat triad, which substitutes for A7, and that's a D triad, which is over the 2 chord, and then that's an E flat triad. Oh my bad. I'm sorry. That's an E triad, which is interesting because it's getting played over G7, so that's implying a G13 flat 9. So you have to hear these things in harmonic context, like. Back to the top. But the point of the story is that those lines clearly spell out triads that are used for a specific harmonic purpose in the moments that they occur. They're not just random.